Hello, and welcome to another IDRS podcast. I'm Terry Ewell, and in this special series of podcasts, we will be hearing an interview with Bernard Garfield, former principal bassoonist with the Philadelphia Orchestra, and an International Double Reed Society honorary member. In addition to the interview, you will hear his music both as a performer and as a composer. In part one, we have his recollections of studying piano and bassoon and his work with the Philadelphia Orchestra.
Mr. Garfield, who were your bassoon teachers, and who did you study with early in your student days?
Well, essentially it was Simon Kovar, and I studied with him, including 1 year at Juilliard, and then the U.S. Army decided it needed me. So I was in the service from 1943. I started the bassoon actually in 1938. My background had been with piano. I had worked with several very good teachers, you know, with Gregory Ashman, who was a New York accompanist for many of the soloists, and Hermann de Grab, who was a Czech, and who introduced me to the harpsichord, clavichord, and the Mozart piano, all of which he had in his studio. And that was really an education to start out by playing a Mozart sonata on that small, old-fashioned piano with very short keys and with knee pedals instead of the feet. I'm sure you're familiar with that.
Oh, yeah. Outstanding,
And then transfer that concept of playing on that instrument to the grand piano. I think it teaches one that it shouldn't be played like a Rachmaninoff prelude.
Yeah.
And so then, and composition, I studied with Hugo Cauder, K-A-U-D-E-R, and I did that for several years before I was drafted. I learned so much from him. His sense of balance, of the melodic content, the harmonic content, and the shape and size of the composition was very pronounced in his teaching. And after the war, I returned to NYU and decided to major in English as opposed to music, because I had done a number of the courses there. And finished my bachelor's with that as a major, and then I went to Columbia and studied composition with Otto Luenig and Henry Cowell, working on a master's. And the next thing you know, I'm playing a lot of bassoon. And that took over. So most of my composing stopped about 1953 when I left Columbia. I managed a master's in composition, and playing in orchestras of various kinds, that and making reeds and doing all that is necessary to keep the skill as a professional bassoonist, that took away from what I'd been doing as a composer.
Oh, okay. Who would you say was your greatest influence on your bassoon playing? Would this be Kovar?
I think so. I would say so. He his attention to the emotional content of music was the most important contribution, and it's the most valuable contribution that you can give to a student. Reed making, I more or less discovered from seeing what my colleagues did, and acquired that along the way. I was fortunate that in the school I went to, they had 4 7,000 heckles. And I was assigned one of them, and which had a beautiful sound, and I had that idea in my mind as I left that school and acquired my own instrument and so on.
I'm fascinated what you've said about Simon Kovar's teaching and things. I'm mostly familiar with his studies, and obviously he was a great pedagogue, but I'd like you to go into a little more detail about what you said about the emotional content of the music and how he taught that and how he conveyed that to you.
Well, every melody has a rise and a fall, and unless you pay attention to that, you're apt to play without much expression. And he was able to take whatever melody that he was teaching, whether it's an orchestral excerpt or a passage from Milda Concert Studies, and he was able to highlight just how he felt the ups and downs went, and that became very pronounced in his teaching. He would, no note would just die, and it was going somewhere or it came from someplace. But that, if you look at my Milda Concert Study book that Kovar edited, as I studied each, you would see a constant flow of hairpins and well, tempo changes that he envisioned as part of the way the particular passage went. And that made a lot of sense to me, and I followed that. I know some teachers have taught it by a simplistic number system, which I only know in a very rudimentary way. But what he did was not done by measuring the amount of the crescendo, but rather an intuitive sense of how he felt it should go. Do you follow me?
Oh, yeah, I absolutely do. I'm sure that that intuitive sense of the line and everything then carried over into your playing with the Philadelphia Orchestra. Is that right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Definitely. Let's see. One thing that Kovar emphasized in reference to technique, and this probably came out of his own early studies as a violinist, the patterns of the upper register, once one gets out of the chromaticism of the regular register, which is no great problem to solve, but if you move it to the upper register, he had lots of studies to develop the fluency so that passages like the bolero or anything that has any motion to it would be fully under your control. He emphasized that, and that's probably what one sees in his many studies, his finger study exercises.
And that must have been some of the inspiration for some of your upper register studies that you've created.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. I remember them and used his ideas to develop what I wanted to add to those, and that's how that came about. I think I have one study called High Pains, which is a favorite of a bassoonist named Jim Huff, who says he's always practicing that. Yeah. It goes up to E and F, and it moves around. And, of course, that's difficult. It's difficult not only because the dexterity of having the complex fingerings move smoothly from one to the other, but to have the reed, the bogle, and the ability to play those notes. But I noticed that composers don't hesitate to write up to E and F, and even F sharp. The passage that Bernstein wrote in
yes, West Side Story.
Yeah. Suite.
Yeah.
I've always played that, but I always had a vocal that was relatively easy to play when you get up to that register. Otherwise, you struggle.
Right. Absolutely. Now, I know you played with the Philadelphia Orchestra from 1957 to 2000. Was there any concert in particular that was very memorable for you?
Well, the first thing that was memorable is having the opportunity to play solo with the orchestra.
Ah.
The Academy of Music, where the concerts were held, is a very grateful hall for wind players. With great ease, whatever you play seems to come forth. It's not as if you're fighting excessive resonance or some kind of a hole where the low notes are not heard unless they're puffed out with great energy. But the thing that impressed me about the Academy was how nice it made you feel, because the sound got out without forcing it. In other words, one could play at a low dynamic and move to a high dynamic and have that entire range, as opposed to starting a mezzo forte and then trying to get loud, you know. There's a limitation to what your reed will do. back to your question about what I enjoyed, concerts that I enjoyed, I cannot think of one in particular. I enjoyed conductors who have come here. I enjoyed playing with Stokowski for the time that he came as a guest conductor. Yep. And Kirtesh was a conductor that I enjoyed. But my favorite, of course, were playing solos or concertantes with the orchestra. That is always something one remembers.
Here, then, is a portion of the Mozart Bassoon Concerto K-191, recorded by Bernard Garfield and the Philadelphia Orchestra under the direction of Eugene Ormandy. The vinyl recording is titled Mozart, the Four Concertos for Woodwinds and Orchestra, Volume 1, by Columbia Records, MS-6451, made in 1963. This podcast starts and ends with portions from Garfield's Quartet No. 1 for bassoon, violin, viola, and violoncello, composed in 1950. This is from the CD titled Music of Bernard H. Garfield, with John Closer bassoon, Ellen DePasquale violin, Stanley Konopka viola, and Richard Weiss violoncello. It's on Azica Records, ACD 71254, Preston, 2010. Thank you.